This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 55 was recorded on September 9th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us today, and this episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersOnPlug.com, the only podcast dedicated to quant and rules-based investing. And right now, they're offering Macro Voices listeners a free book called The Many Flavors of Trend Following. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. Danielle, it's great to have you back on the program. I want to talk about an article that you wrote in your Daily Feather newsletter. It's called Dead Pool of Labor. And I also want to thank you and your team. Normally, of course, this is a subscription-only newsletter. Lena has negotiated with your folks, and we managed to persuade you to let us share this particular issue with listeners. This is from the 9th of September. So listeners, be sure to check on the homepage at macrovoices.com next to Danielle's picture. You'll find a download link for this free sample issue of what is normally Danielle's paid newsletter, The Daily Feather. Now, Danielle, we had Jay Powell very, very confident in Zurich last week. What you've written here is basically a piece that talks about what investors might be missing about the state of the U.S. labor market. So to give people a sense of what they can expect to find when they read that article, give us the executive summary.
Well, I think what's most important is that people understand that even according to the statisticians, the bean counters at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it is very difficult to catch cycle inflection points in hard data. And one of the first glimpses that we got was in August when we saw the annual benchmark revisions. And they provide us with a snapshot of how wrong the BLS was in computing monthly non-farm payrolls, which is, of course, the biggest moment for markets every month worldwide. And what they determined, the rule of thumb is always as such. If it's plus or minus 0.1 or 0.2%, so you're thinking very small percentages, it's a non-event. They move on and they don't even really pay attention. And this is when they captured the full 97% of working Americans. What they found this year was that it was a negative 0.4 percentage point swing in private payrolls. Now, let's give that just a tiny bit of context without getting too far into the weeds. For the entire year of 2017, the benchmark revision was 104,000 jobs for the whole year. What we saw in the year through March 2019 in this fresh batch of data was that payrolls were revised down by an average of 42,000 a month. Statistically significant, 514,000 jobs overall. The thing is, they will not be able to tell you when the economy is turning up or turning down.
Okay, Danielle, that's your take, but you live in the real world. Let's move on to the central bankers. How does Jay Powell see this situation? Is it the same way that you see it?
Well, you know, it was funny because we know that Jay Powell had seen this report. And in addition to not just the fact that we had benchmark revisions, which he knew going in, but the August report specifically saw that there was a fifth consecutive month of downward revisions to the prior month. So now we know that the moldy oldie data has been wrong to the downside. And for the past 5 months, even the real-time data has been overstated. And to give this characterization of Powell seeing the labor market as being in quote unquote quite a strong position, that was a bit off-putting because he had the data in front of him and it is the Fed's own rules that three downward revisions in a row mark an upturn or a downturn in the labor market. And he is insisting that the labor market is the beacon of hope when it is telling them that for 16 out of the last 17 months. That is not a trend. That's the fact, Jack, as I jokingly say. That's a fact. For 16 of the last 17 months, labor market data has been overstated. You shouldn't you shouldn't therefore characterize it as being in, quote, quite a strong position. And yet Powell did, which it opens the question, is he trying to talk investors into feeling a confidence that's not there in the data?
Danielle, I want to get your take, though, on does that mean that Jay Powell doesn't understand this, or does that just mean that Jay Powell is in kind of a political role and the fact that he does understand it forces him to say the opposite of what he really means because that's politics?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Eric. I think that it has to do with him having to talk a big game. And I understand the position that he's in, but these are the things that we look back on and quote with relish saying, you know, gee, Ben Bernanke was clueless saying that subprime was contained. And it bothers me that he is as forceful as he is in insisting that the United States economy is an island versus the rest of the world when operations like KKR, for example, have shown over the weekend that China is in a hard landing. And we know what's happening in Europe. And we also know what's happening here in our own manufacturing sector that's begun to seep into our services sector. The market services PMI that was released last week showed that the employment index had fallen to 50.4. That's a low since 2010. So the evidence is piling up. It would be nice if Powell was a little bit more balanced in his assessment.
Okay, Danielle, so as you assimilate this situation with Powell may or may not believe and mean what he says, but he's got to say what he says because of the position that he's in, what do you think comes next? Because everybody's looking at the ECB meeting on Thursday and then the Fed next week. What should we expect?
We can only hope for Jay Powell's sake, because I do think that he comes across as a sincere and articulate leader, and I think he has a better understanding of the markets than his predecessors. But what we can hope is that he accomplished more than just giving kind of a fluffy speech in Zurich, and that he was able to talk to some of his European counterparts and say, you know what, I get that the bazooka's out and loaded, but if you take down your interest rates, your overnight rate, and you launch QE at the same time, you sure are putting the rest of the world in a precarious position because everybody else has to play catch up. So the more aggressive you are, the more aggressive we have to be, and the more that the currency war that's undergoing right now heats up. So I'm hoping that he was able to convey, and some of the more hawkish individuals on the European Central Bank are able to pull back from just having a full double-barreled stimulus effort come out this week, because that really does force Jay Powell to having to cut more than he otherwise would like to. I think for now, though, the market has accepted where Powell wants to go, and that is a quarter point interest rate cut when we see on September the 18th the Fed statement.
Danielle, we've gotten a huge amount of positive listener feedback to the feature episode that we did with you and Peter Bookvar, but I want to ask a follow-up to that, which is, as we look at the stimulus measures that seem to be nearby on the horizon, probably more rate cutting from the Fed, not sure what the ECB is going to do, but it certainly is not going to be a hiking type of event. It's probably going to be some kind of easing. What do you think this is going to do in terms of producing the desired result in the real economy? Are these stimulus measures going to work, or are we in a situation where, hey, the global economy is slowing and it's going to keep slowing no matter what they do?
That is the multi-trillion dollar question that everybody is asking right now. Back in 2015 and 2016, when China fired up its credit machine, the United States was a direct beneficiary. And China's efforts were able to pull the United States' manufacturing recession at the time back into positive territory. And that was a really great thing. It showed you how interconnected and interdependent the world markets were on stimulus, regardless of its origin. The question today is, you know, there's a chart floating around that shows global stimulus measures equals 9 months out world PMIs turning upwards. Because right now we're in a place where 61% of the globe's manufacturing sectors are in recession right now. That's of the latest month's data. So we have the majority of countries that have a shrinking manufacturing sector, whether you're talking about developed nations, even some emerging markets, because as we know, China hasn't been able to to have a sustainable support network for iron ore, for copper. They're trying really hard right now to pull their domestic consumer up, realizing that they've done too much to try and push Chinese domestic consumers away from the internal combustion engine and into electric vehicles, while at the same time fighting a trade war. So they really are trying to accomplish two things at once. My answer is, I don't know what global stimulus measures are going to do, because in 2015 and 2016, for all of China's massive efforts, there was no trade war going on in the background. And that is not the case today. And I think we can agree, Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, their layoff data showed that over 10,000 layoffs in August were attributable to the trade war. I'm not so sure we can be as bold and say that what happens in China benefits here us in the United States. If I'm Chinese officials, in fact, I'm designing stimulus measures to make sure that they have the highest impact at home and not necessarily to the benefit of my American counterparts trying to take my economy down.
China just announced over the past weekend that they're going to lower their reserve requirement ratio, RRR. It seems to me that's a move intended to create more credit expansion. I would say China's got plenty of credit expansion already, despite the changing trend. They've got an excessive amount of outstanding credit, in my opinion. What do you make of this move, policy move, over the weekend?
Well, Eric, that goes exactly to what we were just talking about a minute ago. And right now, China's got banks that are insolvent. They've got defaults going on in the background. Again, these are not things that we're used to reading about occurring in China. And they are certainly an outgrowth of the over-indebtedness situation that you describe. That being said, if you want to try and continue as Chinese authorities to play this game of whack-a-mole within your credit system, you make sure that whatever lending banks do deploy in response to this reserve requirement being reduced, you make sure that it goes to the right place. So if, you know, China's already announced a few weeks ago that it was going to make a special cash for clunkers type of effort to reinvigorate its car sector domestically, maybe you make sure that the lending that is unleashed goes specifically to your domestic sector, or maybe you make sure that it goes to bolster other banks. All I'm saying is that if I'm Chinese authorities, because that's how they deploy stimulus, is by gunpoint, I'm making sure that the stimulus measures are extremely targeted right now, given the precarious state of their economy.
I've been dying to ask you about Mark Carney going to what arguably is the event of the season for the Fed, the Jackson Hole Conference. And it seems to me when he described what he called a multipolar currency, I think that was a central banker euphemism for we need to ditch the dollar as being the center of everything and get to a world where we're not dependent on just the United States being in charge of how the international monetary system works. Part one, am I correct to interpret that's what he meant? Part two, what do you make of his proposal about a multipolar currency, whether it be digital as he described or otherwise?
Well, you know, there are certain ironies about coming into somebody's backyard and trashing their currency, which is, I don't think it got near the press that it should have gotten because everybody kind of went home. The media kind of checked out after Powell got off the podium. But on a fundamental level, Carney was saying, look, you've got five times as many dollar transactions as you do U.S. contribution to global GDP. I mean, there's a certain amount of sensibility in what he's proposing. On the other hand, to try and couch it in saying it needs to be digital in nature is really just putting out the old argument for de-dollarizing the world economy in the drag of digital currency. So it wasn't necessarily something revolutionary that Carney was proposing, but rather it was something that alleviated a problem that, as Jeff Snyder has said on Macro Voices time and again, is becoming increasingly problematic for central bankers, for authorities outside of the United States to contend with, especially as we approach quarter end and as we approach the very end of the year and the limited number of dollars out there becomes more and more of their problem, but parked in our currency. So I certainly see where he's coming from. I think he chose an interesting venue, but I think he's got a point.
And just for our listeners' benefit, we've got a fantastic feature interview coming up on Thursday evening's podcast with both Jeff Snyder and Luke Groman going into great detail on this whole U.S. dollar global liquidity squeeze issue. And again, listeners, be sure to check macrovoices.com. There's a link next to Danielle's picture, and it is a free issue of the Daily Feather, which is Danielle's paid subscriber newsletter. And it's really an excellent article. Danielle, just for the benefit of our listeners, please tell them a little bit more about the Daily Feather. When do you publish it? Give us the backstory.
So by 7 a.m. Eastern every day, the Daily Feather is hitting your inbox every trading day. It is something that we've been doing for a little bit over a year, a follow-on at Quill Intelligence to what I've been writing for over 4 years, which is a much more in-depth weekly Quill, never more than 4.5 to 5 minutes. And it's always on something timely that has nothing to do with what you're reading on the sell side or the buy side. So it's got a cult following. Read the Daily Feather.
Danielle, thanks so much for a fantastic interview. We'll look forward to an update from you in a couple of weeks. Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by Top Traders Unplugged. This podcast, which I highly recommend, is delivered to you by some of the world's leading practitioners and gives you an unprecedented insight into the world of trend following and other rules-based investment strategies, which have delivered outstanding returns for many decades. So if you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to toptradersunplugged.com/macro, where right now you can claim a free copy of the book, The Many Flavors of Trend Following. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. And be sure to also check my interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on the subject of trend following that was published last Friday. It's also in your Macro Voices feed. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.